midweek, and I've got a good one for you. What's going on? Welcome to the jungle. I am Jim Rome. The program today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. A good one because we're all over the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs. I've got Major League Baseball. I've got golf. I've got some things off the board. It's going to be a very good day, a very good show. Come and get some. 1-800-636-8686. 1-800-636-8686. I double down on the telephone number because we are 44 days until Smack Off 25. Man, it's going to sneak up and bite you right in the ass if you do not get in. 44 days. I'm going to hit that thing every single day going forward. 44 days until the biggest day of the year. In fact, since this is the Silver Smack Off, as some of you clones have glossed it, it's going to be the biggest of the Smack Offs we've ever had. So 44 days out, you want to get in right now. In order to win it, you have to be in it. In order to get into it, you have to qualify or already have a win to your name. You know how that goes. You know this drill. All right, coming up next segment, I've got a golf interview. Max Homa, he won the Wells Fargo Championship. That's coming up in about 15 minutes. In fact, in hour one, we'll double up today. Titan Sege, Buffalo Bills offensive lineman, joins me at 40 past. Nothing in the way of interviews in hour number two. AJ Hinch, back in the jungle in the third hour. Call me, follow me on Twitter, at Jim Rome, or email us. Let me start with the NBA. Now, you knew the Sixers were going to be in for a tough night even before that game started. You knew because Joel Embiid was not at the team shoot-around in the morning. So, of course, the media went to Jimmy Butler and said, yo, Buckets, what's up with Joe? How is he doing?
I don't know. I haven't talked about him, about how he's doing. I can look at him and tell how he's doing.
All right, so he doesn't need to talk to him. Jimmy Butler said, I can look at this guy and see how he's doing. All right, Jay, how's he look?
Sickness. Try to stay as far away as I could, to tell you the truth. I love him, but I don't want to be sick either. I hate getting sick.
Hey, we're all like that, right? When you see somebody who's sick, you don't want to go anywhere near them because, well, we hate being sick. Hey, JB, one more thing. One more thing. What do you think the big fella's got?
I'm not a f***ing doctor. I don't know.
I'm not a bleeping doctor. I don't know. Well said. So word comes down that Joe had an upper respiratory infection. So that's an upper respiratory infection, the ongoing gastro stomach distress, and the knee issue. It's a hell of a long list. Enough to make you burn one of your sick days, which is apparently exactly what the rest of the Sixers did last night, because Toronto played like they were going up against air last night. That was easier than a shoot around. Final score, Toronto, a billion. Philadelphia, a humiliation. And it went like that all night long because Kawhi did this.
Hand off for Kawhi. Siakam sets a screen. Here's Kawhi. Oh! The monster slam by Kawhi Leonard.
Look out. Not only that, but Kawhi also did this.
Be a passive offensive player.
Kawhi!
Think about that. If you're not watching on CBS Sports Network, it almost doesn't matter because you can hear it. You can hear the thunder. You can hear the humiliation. Pascal Siakam then did this.
That category. It's been such a big deal in this series. Look at that block.
Siakam pins it up against the glass.
But a calf feeling a little bit better.
And after he did that, Siakam did this.
Scott with 10 points off of the bench. Turnover. Gasol. J.J. Redick trying to tie him up.
And I really want to believe that Marc Gasol waved for Joel to come out and guard him at the three-point line. But in truth, it was only for a screen. Then again, who cares? Toronto called their shot. They dominated and they mocked and they humiliated Philadelphia in the process. Yes, that process.
Just the process?
That was grown-ass men going up against boys last night. And whereas in previous games, it was all Kawhi, all by himself, last night, his entire crew showed up. Everybody was looking to eat last night. Siakam, Gasol, Kyle Lowry, Danny Green, Serge Ibaka, hell, Norman Powell, if you need him. You remember a few days back when everybody was convinced that Kyle Lowry was done, that he was beating people down the court last night. Remember a few days back when Marc Gasol was allegedly washed. That guy was doing whatever the hell he wanted. And remember when Kawhi was packing his bags. Well, now Kawhi is one win away from the conference finals. But let me say this. As good as Toronto was last night, Game 5 was also about how terrible the Sixers were. So where do you want to put the blame? A lot of you are looking to put it all on Joe for his 13 points, 6 rebounds, and 8 turnovers. That's not good. I'll give you that. And a lot of you are rushing in to kill this guy. Except one guy who's not is his own head coach, Brett Brown.
You know, it's he was trying to do whatever he could to represent his organization and play basketball for the Philadelphia 76ers. I'm kind of disappointed, like he gets shooken around to me too much. Like, he's trying to play for us. He's trying to get out of bed with a significant temperature and come represent the organization. I think it's grossly unfair, some of the criticism that he gets. I don't understand that. And so it's not ideal. It's you wished he were at shoot around. You wished he were in film sessions. But he's had a temperature for the last few days that's kept him in bed. And so, you know, take whatever you want out of that answer and end it with, it's not ideal. I wished he was at practice and I wished he was in some film sessions, but he's sick.
All right, so take whatever you can out of that answer. If you know this show and you know me, you know I'm a big Brett Brown guy. This is a big Brett Brown house. Listen, I understand why some people are coming for Joel. Embiid is larger than life. He's huge on the court. He's even bigger in press conferences, and he's an absolute legend online. And he talks a lot. And Philadelphia needs him right now in a big way. Just as any team in the playoffs would need their big man who's averaging 28 points, 14 boards, 4 assists, and a couple of blocks a night. But clearly, he's not right. He's trying, but he's not right. Right now, either because of his lungs or his stomach or his knee or all three, which is why Joe taking all the heat for how he's played, to me, is kind of weird. In fact, it's kind of ridiculous. There are some things that you can't play through. If he's spending nearly all of his time between games, nearly all day, either in bed or on the throne, what do you really expect from this guy when the ball goes up? If your point is, yeah, well, he averaged 28 per game in the regular season, he's not doing it now. Right. Exactly. He's sick. That's what happens when you're sick. You generally do not play as well when you're not healthy. So either you think he's not sick and that he's faking it, or the team is covering for him, or you don't understand exactly how it works when you get sick. And then if the issue is, yeah, well, what about his body language? Yeah, okay. Maybe. I guess. But that feels like a reach too. If you're telling me that Joe's body language is the reason why the Sixers are down 3-2 and just got their asses kicked, then you're telling me that the Sixers are not the team that we thought they were. Not if the rest of them can't pick the big fella up when he's hanging. What I'm saying is, their biggest problem is not that Joe is sick. Not that he's not playing as well as he did during the regular season. Their biggest problem is other guys aren't stepping up. I mean, Jimmy Butler is doing what he can, but Tobias Harris had 15 last night. J.J. Redick had 3. Ben Simmons had 33 points. Oh, wait, that's in the last 4 games. Right, Simmons, 33 points, last 4 games total. I know this guy's young. I know Toronto is going to throw different looks at him, but 33 points in 4 games can't happen. It just can't. I know he doesn't have a jumper yet, and that if you keep him out of the open floor, he's not nearly as dangerous. But if you're looked at as a potential future MVP candidate, you cannot be invisible in playoff games like this. Simmons is a bigger issue right now than Embiid. Simmons hasn't just become one-dimensional, he's borderline no-dimensional. And that's brutal. I get it. He's young. He's still making the transition from a wing to a point guard. And he's done an amazing job of doing that on the fly. But this is a chance for him to step up, and he's not rising to the occasion. And his team needs him to do so badly. Somebody somewhere needs to find Jared Dudley. to give a scouting report on Simmons to shake him out of this. Otherwise, this series is not going back to Toronto. Yes, Joel Embiid is a problem, but not as big as the rest of the guys that he's running with that are not picking him up.
I'm not a f***ing doctor. I don't know.
Hey, Jimmy. What's up, the big fella? What's
I'm
he got?
A doctor, I don't know.
I'm not a bleeping doctor. I don't know. 1-800-636-8686. Had a lead with that. I got to ask, man. When you look at that game, and then you look at the other game last night, what the hell happened in those game fives? Both those series were competitive and compelling as hell until those game fives rolled around. Denver ran Portland right out of the gym last night. So I've got to recap that one too. And then, of course, there is Game 7. There is Game 7. You had two NBA games last night that were decided by an average of 31. But then you have a Game 7. The Game 7 was everything those two games were not. That's an NHL Game 7, which I'll hit a little bit later on. There was a no-hitter last night. Used to be when there was a no-hitter, that would lead the show every single time. But since no-hitters are like the new shutout, it's not going to lead the show. Hell, a no-hitter might not even make the show. But luckily, last night's no-hitter was really wacky. So I'll get it in. Email number one, dear Romy, I'll tell you what I thought about last night's Raptors 76ers game. The Raptors won 125-89, signed Irv. Casey in New Hampshire. New England's top emailer outside of Poland Springs. I'm so glad that Irv quit. I'm so glad that he quit and didn't tell Jeannie Buss. Not because the Lakers look even worse, but because I didn't get those emails. Normally, I'm always so fast to say, hey, clone, stop sending that email. You got to do better than that. If all of those emails were to stop, I'd never miss them. Those emails I did miss. I'm more than happy to start the show with that email, which is why I'm happy that Irv quit. Hey, Jim, I agree with Jimmy Butler. I'm not an effing doctor either. Regards, Doc Mike.
I'm not a f***ing doctor. I don't know.
War real doctors. Doc Mike? Who, Doc Mike Ditola? That doc? He's a dentist. He's a doctor. Wait, Jimmy Butler isn't a doctor? And he doesn't even need to tell or ask Joel what's wrong with him. So what you're telling me is Jimmy Buckets isn't down with the sickness. We are, signed, Disturbed. Oh, ah! Dear Rome, Joel just needs to warm up some water, mix it with five dashes of bitters, a shot of whiskey, cinnamon, lemon, a piece of hair, ginger, and three shreds of carrot. That'll heal everything. Signed, Home Remedy Guy. John in Huntington Beach. War going to work sick to get your colleagues sick instead of your family. It's one of your better efforts, John, honestly. That's what I do. I give you credit when you earn it. I crack you when you don't. John, I'm going to give you a 1 for that out of 10. Hey, Jim, did you see Ben Simmons' jump shot? Side of Markelle Fultz. When we come back, Max Homa joins us. We talk some golf. In fact, we'll go back-to-back, which means you should call me right now. Get yourself in the rotation. Mother's Day is coming up this weekend. There is absolutely nothing most of us would not do to make sure that the special moms in our life are happy. Without mom, where would you be? Not here. Without the mother of your kids, where would you be? In a world of hurt, take care of mom. Sherry's Berries is the best way I know to take care of mom. I love Sherry's Berries. Long before they became a sponsor on this program, I bought Sherry's Berries and I gave them away as gifts. It's a home run every single time. Berries, designed just for mom. Topped with chocolate chips, pink, shimmer, sugar, and swizzles. And you can choose your delivery date to ensure that mom gets your gift of Sherry's Berries exactly when you want her to. And your satisfaction is always guaranteed. Do not wait until the last minute on this one. Go to berries.com, order freshly dipped strawberries starting at $19.99 for the moms in your life. These berries are absolutely incredible. If you want to make mom really happy, and I do this every single time myself, you can double up. Double the berries for only $10 more. Mother's Day is Sunday, May 12th. If you want to wow mom, visit berries.com, B-E-R-R-I-E-S.com. Click the mic. It's in the upper right-hand corner. Look for the microphone. Enter my code Rome. Berries.com, B-E-R-R-I-E-S.com. Click the microphone. Type in the code name Rome. I'm telling you, these things are miraculous. Hit it.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Could not wait to get out of this break to get to this one. We're joined right now by a PGA Tour golfer, 2013 NCAA champion at Cal, member of the 2013 Walker Cup team. He shot a 4-under-67 on Sunday to win the Wells Fargo Championship. That was his first career PGA Tour win. We are joined by Max Homa. Max, great to have you on. How are you?
Hey, man, I'm great. How are you doing? Thanks for having me. This is a real honor.
Yeah, Max, great to talk to you as we're looking forward to it. Listen, we got a lot of ground to cover, so let me just jump right into it. Take me back. You were tied for the lead after three rounds. So what was Saturday night and Sunday morning like? What were the emotions like? What was going through your mind?
A lot. Sunday morning was rough. That was like the biggest stomachache you've ever had. Thought my clock broke four or five times because I felt like time wasn't moving. But once I got to the course, I felt comfortable all of a sudden and obviously kind of got the ball rolling.
What a great description. Now, you've been through some tough times in your career, and I'll get into that in a minute, but you took the lead with a birdie on five, then you added a birdie on seven, you stretched it to four with birdies early on the back nine, but there were some weather issues, and that led to a long weather delay. It could have shaken you, but it didn't. Exactly what did you do during that weather delay?
I sat by my locker. I called my fiance, asked her not to talk about golf at all, tried to distract me. And then I texted my coach, said, I think I'm going to throw up. And he said, well, I'm having a beer, so you do you and I'll do me.
That is great. Max Homa joining us. And then you're back at it and you got that downhill 6-foot putt to say par on 14. What was going through your mind at that point?
Yeah, I kind of had a feeling that if I made that, I win, because I thought it would, show me a lot about myself, show me that I've been in command of my nerves. So once I made that, it kind of all started to feel very possible, very real. But yeah, that was a tough timing for a rain delay, because you don't really ever want a 6-footer for par, let alone after an hour wait, leading by, three.
Max Homa joining us. Exactly right. And listen, we will get into what you had to go through to get to this point. But when that putt drops on 18 and you know you've won your first PGA Tour event, can you put into words or describe exactly what that felt like?
No, I mean, I didn't plan on yelling. I didn't plan on fist pumping. I didn't have any of that. So I guess it just shows it all kind of flew out of me, man. A lot of frustration, a lot of happiness, a lot of relief. It kind of floods to your brain pretty quick. This game beats you so more often than you beat it. So when you finally get to do it once, especially after a bit of some struggles, it's pure relief and pure joy.
So, Max, so people can fully understand what you and I are kind of talking about, if you go back, you went to Valencia High School here in California. When did you first get into golf?
I actually got in early. I grew up next to Griffith Park golf course.
Sure.
So I guess I would go with my dad, and then we moved to Valencia. I played Vista Valencia, home of Jason Gore. So they had a great junior program for a public par 61 golf course. But I got lucky, man. A lot of my friends played. It's a kind of an older man's sport, but sometimes you get these areas where a lot of young kids kind of gravitate to the golf course, and I got lucky. So we were able to play and practice quite a bit.
Max Homa joining us. And then you go to Cal, and in 2013, you were the NCAA champion. You beat guys like John Rahm. Then you're on the Walker Cup team with Justin Thomas. What were those days like?
Yeah, that was the good old days, everything felt easy. We were kind of on top of the world. Golf felt pretty simple, and it was a lot of fun. But it was always cool being around those guys, competing with those guys, and then watching those guys succeed so much, as I was kind of not doing what they were doing, it was still cool to know that we had kind of been in the same bubble for quite some time.
So you were killing it then. It was pretty, it's never easy, but it was going pretty smoothly. And then you make the transition to professional golf, and that can be a really bumpy transition for a lot of guys. What was it like for you?
Yeah, right away it was easy, actually. Or not easy, but it was kind of the same old. I got ninth in my first PGA Tour event and, you know, was kind of smooth sailing, I thought. And then all of a sudden I started looking around too much, thinking I needed to get a lot better at golf. And, you know, just a slippery slope. You start trying to change little things, and next thing you know, you're not you anymore. And all of a sudden, you know, I kind of lost it a bit. It got bumpy pretty quick. And I just, like, kind of couldn't stop the skid until about, you know, two years ago. I hit the lowest you could hit golf-wise, and kind of finally started to, you know, improve and get back to what I was doing well, you know, 5-6 years ago.
Max Homa joining us. You know, the fact is, on your second year on tour, you missed 15 of 17 cuts. You made a funny joke. You said you were making more money in the pro-ams than you were in tournaments. But like you said, you kind of get down to rock bottom. But you also said when you hit that point, quote, I used to say, when I hit rock bottom, I found a shovel and I kept digging. I went to some low places. I mean, the thing is, you've been one of the best amateur players around. So did you always know that if you kept digging, you'd find your way out eventually? Or did you start to think, you know what, man, maybe it's never going to come back?
Yeah, I had a lot of the negatives. I didn't think it was going to, or I didn't know it was going to come back. But I made a promise to myself that I wasn't going to be the guy, you know, that I wanted to be the story that I guess it's kind of turned into. It's a little bit more inspirational. I don't think it happens very often. I think that I set my mind to being tougher than everybody. And I did know that obviously I was pretty good at some point, and I got all these guys that I played with succeeding. So I knew that my game could come back, but I knew that I was going to have to buckle down pretty hard and be super nice to myself and get my attitude about as good as it could be, or else, you know, it was just going to be too hard to battle myself and golf.
Hey, Max, how do you do that? I mean, is it simply a decision? Do you just decide? You know, think about that for 1 second. And I want to say the word relentless is one that's got a lot of significance for you. Like, when did that become an attitude and a mindset? Did you just decide, I'm going to be like this? What's the process?
Yeah, man. I've always been a very self-determined person. That's kind of always been my thing. And, you know, I was sitting back and thinking about golf, and I thought, you know, well, Rory McIlroy hits his driver better than anybody. Justin Thomas hits his 7-iron better than everybody. I'm going to be tougher than everybody, and that was going to be my thing to get back. And, yeah, I guess it just a very big decision I made. You know, obviously the word relentless, that's kind of where I got it from, and I just wanted to buckle down. I thought that if I stayed the course and could get very, very into the process and one day at a time, I thought at some point I could actually be here again.
In other words, maybe the best club in the bag is your mind.
Yeah, it used to not be. That's what's crazy. So some of the struggles might have actually set me up for some success, because I used to be very hard on myself, and all of a sudden I got very big into being positive, very big on being nice to myself, and very, very big on keeping it as simple as possible.
Hey, Max, what's that mean, being nice to yourself? Like, you obviously want to push yourself to be as determined and mentally tough as possible. How do you balance that with being, quote, nice to yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still very intense. You know, I want to beat the hell out of everybody. I'm not going to back down to those things. But at the same time, if I had a bad shot, you can't be telling yourself you suck. You can't be telling yourself to quit. You know, you think it's just kind of little words you're saying to yourself, but I think that they cut a little deeper than you think. Golf's a tough sport because you're out there 5 hours, just you and your caddy, and, you know, at times you can kind of get on an island, and that's what I do. And it was just kind of like mental warfare when it was going bad, even when it was going okay at times. So I think that's been the biggest leap I've made.
Max Homa joining us. Max, before you go, I want to say you're a legend on Twitter. And with tweets such as, quote, just witnessed a guy with Southwest priority boarding choose a middle seat. Pretty sure, or pretty discomforting to know, there's a serial killer on my flight, end quote. My man, that's such a great point. What does it say about somebody with a priority pass that they're choosing, that they want the middle seat?
Dude, it was straight up scary. I saw this guy and I couldn't stop looking at him. I didn't know if I was supposed to get off the plane or not. It was frightening. I despise middle seats, so I guess to each their own, but that was a little disheartening for me.
I would say, how about this one? Quote, met a woman at the airport from my hometown. Pretty crazy considering we're so far from home. I lied when she asked where I'm from, obviously because that would lead to more small talk, but crazy nonetheless. End of quote. Look, a lot of pro athletes try to avoid being interesting on Twitter because it might get them in trouble. So what's your approach?
Yeah, I just try to be myself, man. I think someone's always going to hate you. I'm sure, you know, you're much more famous than me. I'm sure that happens a lot more to you. So I
every hour, my man.
I know I'm a decent person. So I trust that people are going to kind of see that come through.
He is a PGA Tour pro. He was the national champion at Cal, a member of the 2013 Walker Cup team, and he's got his first win. And Max, I'm proud of you. It's great to talk to you. It's always good to talk to a SoCal, who's a great story, man. Really nice to have you on, Max. Let's do it again soon.
Yeah, hey, my pleasure, Jim. Thanks for having me on. This is a real dream for me. Pretty surreal.
That was awesome. Really good to talk to you, Max. I was looking forward to it. You lived up to all the hype. You crushed it. You nailed it. You were great this weekend, and you had a great first jungle run. Max Homa, that was fun. Love that. 1-800-636-8686. You know I'm not going to come out of a break and say, man, I could not wait for that break to end so I could get to this guy and have it be a dud. You knew that was going to be good. Had never spoken to him, but saw him this past weekend and love what I saw. All right, we'll take a short time out. When we come back, Bills Mafia. Never too soon to talk about your season. So what happens when you head to that man cave to watch an important game and you can't find the remote? Oh, there's the DVD remote, the streaming remote, but where is the TV remote? It is time for Control Center by Cavo, the one universal remote that does it all. Control Center manages all of your content, so you can control everything connected to your TV with one easy-to-use voice-controlled remote. Plus, you can turn on the TV from anywhere with the Cavo mobile app. Setup is easy. Plug in your streamer, sound system, cable or satellite, even your game console, and Control Center will handle the rest. Make life in that man cave easier with Control Center by Cavo. Shop right now. Save $10 on the Control Center Starter Pack Bundle with a one-year service plan included with the promo code ROME. $10 off the regular price of $89.95 with the promo code ROME. CAAVO.com. Control Center is available at CAAVO.com. Best Buy service plan required. First 45 days free. See website for details. Control Center by Cavo. One remote that does it all. Here is your bottom of the hour sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Wednesday is an ATP Day. Ask the Pros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros and drop your question right there. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Let me reset you very quickly. Back-to-back interviews and back-to-back amazing stories. Max Homa was tremendous. God, it was so great talking to him. We're going to talk Bills football in a minute, but it's even bigger than that. I love that this guy ends up with Buffalo, but his backstory also was amazing. Riddy Bad Luck 13 tweets, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, Max. I'll say I suck whenever I want. Signed, Tyborg. Max was making the point that he had to start to be nice to himself. And when I said, what do you mean by that? He goes, golf is a really tough game. It's not going to do me any good to tell myself you suck after and making a bad shot. And I think we all thought the exact same thing when he said that. Right, you think two things. One, I agree, that probably won't help. And two, but then again, maybe it will. Because the Tyborg does it all the time.
Let's go to 13.
God, Tiger!
Once again, a one-handed follow-through.
Christ.
He is totally out of sequence in his golf swing.
So far, stuck behind me.
Tyborg!
Tiger!
Did I hear a JC blast at the end of that, too? I think.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I thought so. I thought so. Tough game. Really tough game. That's why I don't play.
Yeah, it happens.
My man, you got that Medal of Freedom, though. They can't take that from you. Nobody can take that from you.
What's that?
You suck. Ty Borg. I've got some more golf. In fact, today's a big golf day. Max Homa came in, and I guarantee that will not be the last time. One, because I know he's going to win again. And two, because he showed up the way he did in his jungle debut. And there's more where that came from. You imagine having the responsibility and the power to possibly win an entire city free beer. That story's coming up in a minute. But as I promised, we're going back to back in hour number one with two really good stories. Now we're joined by an offensive lineman for the Buffalo Bills. He signed with Buffalo in March. He did not allow a sack at left tackle last season. He started his career with the Corpus Christi Sharks in AF2. He was undrafted back in 2009 out of Texas State. Ty Insege is my guest. Ty, it's great to have you on the show. How are you?
How you doing, Jim?
Good, good. Ty, how about you?
I'm doing good, man. I can't complain.
Good, good. Listen, I think you've got one of the great all-time stories in terms of walking a long road to get to where you are. And as proof of that, you've got jerseys from 10 teams that you played for along the way hanging in your office when you first started playing with the Corpus Christi Sharks in the AF2. Ty, start right there. What were those games like back then, and what was your life like?
Well, you know, it was simple. You know, they paid for our living, so I stayed in like a dormitory type style housing unit. And, you know, it was just practice and games. So, you know, if we won, we got paid $150. If we lost, we got paid $100. So after taxes, it came out to about $85, $110. So it wasn't really, we weren't really playing it for the money. You know, it was basically playing it for the opportunity to get a shot to one day play in the NFL.
I mean, Ty, that's amazing. Like, for instance, you're paying the price, though. I mean, you are doing the work, and you're taking real hits. What was it like to grind like that and take that kind of punishment, even if there was a bigger picture down the road, to pay that kind of price physically for $85?
Well, you know, at the time, I was young. So, basically, I just had one goal in mind. So, I really didn't think about what I was going through and what I was putting my body through. I was just thinking about if I competed at the highest level I'm capable of, you know, hopefully I'll get an opportunity to play at the highest level.
All right, so you had a plan, but when you're playing for teams like the Sharks or the Vigilantes or the LA Kiss or in Montreal, was the goal always the NFL, and did that seem close, or did it seem really far away?
Well, the Kiss came when I got released from the Redskins my first time around. So it kind of, the dream kind of felt like it was fading at that time, because I went to the Kiss. And that was after I came from Montreal and I got picked up by the Redskins. So at that point, I was just like, well, I don't know what's going to happen with my football career, but I just need to at least continue playing so I can receive revenue, so I can continue to pay bills until I can figure out what I'm going to do next. So I don't – at that time, my mind frame really wasn't based on living the dream still. It was just trying to maintain my life.
Ty Insege is joining us. Ty, you mentioned the Kiss. Like, I'm here in L.A. I remember when they dropped. It was kind of a source of fascination. Yep. Like, did Gene Simmons, did he ever come around? Did you ever talk to the boss?
No, I didn't get to talk to him. I can't even recall who I even talked to be honest with you.
What was that experience like? Yeah, like, I mean, is that football, was that, like, disorganized, dysfunctional, or is football football? What was that like?
Well, you know, I don't really want to talk down on an organization that gave me opportunity. So, I mean, It was good for what it was worth. I'll say that.
All right, I respect that, Ty. I see you working. So as you're doing this thing, and you know, you talked about the money you made. When you're grinding that thing out, you may have a goal, but what kept you going in those tough times? How did you continue to keep focused and keep putting the time in and grind it out? What was it that kept you going?
Well, you know, I always knew, because when I grew up, when I was young, you know, coming up through Texas 5A football, you know, I was ranked among the elite in high school. So I always knew I had the talent when I was young. So, you know, I got derailed a few times, and I just, deep down inside my heart, I knew I was capable of playing at the highest level. I just needed the opportunity. So when, you know, adversity hit, I had, you know, good friends, good family in my corner that kept me motivated and kept pushing me through the hard times. So that, with the heart that I knew that I had the capability to play at this high level, you know, that kind of helped keep me motivated and keep me going.
No, that's so important. When you've got people around you saying, I believe in you, you can do this, we know you can do it. Now, at one point, you were with the Philadelphia Soul, and you would talk to Ron Jaworski every single day, and he would tell you, man, you're too good to be here. What were those conversations like?
Man, you know, every day in practice, you know, Jaws would be out there watching us and everything, and he'd watch one-on-ones, and he'd be like, man, it's amazing. Your talent is amazing. You know, you should be in their camp. I'm going to do what I can to get you into the Eagles camp. So, you know, I just took that as, you know, that's you know, Jaworski's seen NFL talent. So the fact that he even considered me to be able to be in the same presence with NFL talent, you know, that was amazing. So, you know, I took his word. You know, I figured that, you know, he'd be able to make something happen because it wasn't just a one-time thing. It was a constant thing. He would always say that after games, you know, in practices. So I figured, you know, he'd be able to make a phone call and pull some strings, but unfortunately, that never came to fruition.
Right, Ty. Like, I mean, he's telling you that. You're hearing that. He can be the guy. And then it didn't happen. And then you're waiting again. What was your mindset when that didn't happen?
Oh, man. At that point, I just was like, I'm going to just keep putting my head down and keep grinding. You know, something has to break for me.
And it did. And you keep grinding, and then finally you get that shot. You're playing for Washington, and you get your first start against the New York Jets in 2015.
Yep.
After all that work, that entire grind, and all that belief, what was it like to make that first start?
Well, you know, I got to, you know, at the end of the day, I got an athletic ego. So, you know, I was just like, now it's time to showcase my talent to the world. So I just got to do what I do best.
Ty, what did that mean? You have an athletic ego. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, if I line up against somebody, I have pride in my work. So I go out there every down and, you know, I put effort and I put energy into training and to being the best that I can be. So I don't feel I can go out there on a Sunday or on a Thursday and compete and just lay a goose egg. You know, I feel like if I go out there, I'm going to compete at the highest level and I'm going to do the best I can to shut that person down that day.
All right, so then there was a game last year, Ty, week 11 against the Texans. You went up against Jadeveon Clowney. You had a huge performance. What do you remember about preparing for that game and for Clowney in particular?
I just know they got an elite defensive front, so I knew I just had to put in extra time in the film room and in the classroom that week. And, you know, I just felt this was the opportunity, you know, going against an elite talent as Jadeveon. And I just wanted to, you know, perform the best and try to help my team win.
Ty, did you know, though, after that game, how much attention and how much respect you would earn because of your performance?
Oh, man, you know, it's not just one game. You know, one game doesn't win divisions. One game doesn't win playoffs, you know. So it's you know, the goal of last year was for us to try to compete for a championship. And, you know, that's what the main motivation was, you know, try to stack wins.
And then you hit free agency. I understand that you're all about the team. You're about big picture. But then Buffalo offered you a two-year deal, Ty, worth a good chunk of change. I'm being really straight when I say this. I don't know anybody who's earned that contract like you've earned that contract. Man, you have earned that money. What was that moment like, Ty?
I appreciate that. Oh, man. I had to take a seat and just thank God, man. It's been a long road. It's been a long journey. And the fact that I'm able to provide for my family and you know, my son and generations, to where, you know, they don't have to go through the same struggle and the same adversity that I had to go through. You know, it's a wonderful feeling.
You know, Ty, you know what I think is really neat about this? The Bills, they love your talent. They love your ability to play multiple spots. But they also say they want to bring you in because of your character and your perseverance. How much does that mean to you that they want you not just because you're a good player, because of your potential impact on their culture?
Well, you know, coming from my background of being on several different teams, you know, it's hard to get that feeling of want. You know, you always yearn to be wanted somewhere, you know, to actually be appreciated of your talent and everything, not just as a number or, you know, as a guy that if the main guy goes down, we're capable at backup. You know, to come to Buffalo and get that feeling like I'm one of the family, you know, that's a beautiful feeling. You know, I haven't had that feeling in a long time, and it's a great thing to have here.
Hey, Ty, I got about a minute left. I got to ask you, if somebody's listening right now who's got a dream and they're chasing it, but they feel beaten down and they want to give in and they want to give up, what's your advice?
Man, just stay humble, stay focused, and you know, put all your faith in God. And everything happens for a reason. You know, like the chip's going to fall, how the chip's going to fall. You can only worry about what you can control. So, you know, just go out there and prepare for when your time does come so you're not unprepared and go take full advantage of it.
What a great message. Bills Mafia, you have to love this. He signed with Buffalo in March. He is an offensive lineman now for the Bills. He's got that multi-year contract and a great, great story. Ty Insege. Ty, so good to have you on. Let's do it again during the season, if you don't mind.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Thank you for having me.
Great talking to you, Ty. Thank you very much. Nice to meet you. Did I or did I not tell you I had two great stories in hour number one, back to back? Good stories of inspiration. Bills Mafia, never too soon to talk about your season and your team. You got to love what you hear from him. Second hour is open. Third hour, we have AJ Hinch. And I've got some really good content between now and then, including the Silver Smackoff storylines.